This is Marketplace from APM. I'm David Gura. John G. Sperling has died. He was 93 years old, and if you haven't heard of him, you've probably heard of the school he founded, the for-profit University of Phoenix, which he said has served over 1 million people. Sperling's university has gotten plenty of criticism, in part for how much debt students took on and how few of them graduate. Emily Hanford is the education correspondent for American Radio Works, and she had the last interview with Sperling a couple of years ago. He spent part of that interview defending his school.
Traditional education has slammed the door. Where in the hell are you going to educate these people? Well, it's going to be places like the University of Phoenix, or they aren't going to be educated, period.
Hi, Emily.
Hi.
So you interviewed John Sperling when he was 91, and I should say 91 and proud of it.
Oh, yes, indeed. He was full of life at 91, that's for sure.
His life story is so fascinating. He grew up on a farm in the Ozarks and of course, became a billionaire. How did he get there? How did he come to start the school that became the University of Phoenix?
Yeah, as you mentioned, he grew up really poor. No one in his family had gone to college. He didn't think he was going to go to college. He became like a lefty. He was a socialist at one point. You know, he did what the University of Phoenix students do today. He went to class during the day, and he worked at a gas station at night, and he transferred to Reed College, a, you know, elite liberal arts school in Oregon. He went to Berkeley. He had two PhDs. He was just sort of this liberal, lefty humanities professor guy, and he ended up starting the University of Phoenix, one of the biggest for-profit universities, one of the biggest universities in the entire world.
How did the time he spent at Reed and at Cambridge and then as a humanities professor, as you say, sort of affect the pedagogy at the University of Phoenix? Did it influence it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was always a guy who was sort of on the outside looking in. And that was certainly true when he went to the kind of, you know, elite world of academia. He was kind of that working class guy who didn't fit in. And he really had a kind of a chip on his shoulder about traditional academia right from the very beginning, even though he benefited greatly from it. But he really saw that there was this whole group of people like him who didn't have access to this world of higher education. And that's really where the University of Phoenix idea came from.
And that's no small thing to start a school, to start a university. How quickly and how big did this thing grow?
Well, it started in 1976, and there were 8 students in 1976. And within
way earlier than I thought it would be. I mean, you think of University of Phoenix relying on the internet, doing a lot of online classes. This has been something that's been around for a while.
No. So the University of Phoenix had been chugging along, and it really wasn't in some ways what you might think of it now. Mm. Most of the people who were going there were working professionals. They were finishing bachelor's degrees, and they were really successful. They were paying out of pocket. They weren't getting financial aid. They weren't getting student loans. It wasn't about just learning for learning's sake. It was very much like, what do you need to learn to do your career better? What do you need to learn to get to the next step in your career? That's what we're going to teach people. And, you know, there was a lot of disdain for him from the very beginning because of that.
A pivotal moment in this company's history, and I say company because this was a for-profit corporation, is when it went public and the stock price really soared.
Yeah, absolutely. It went public and Wall Street loved it right away. And this was the early 90s. And then I think the big turning point came in the early 2000s when students at the University of Phoenix were now getting federal loans. They were using financial aid. And when they started to go in this market of associate degree seekers, they came up against this problem, which is people who are seeking associate's degrees tend to be less successful no matter where they go.
What did John Sperling say about that criticism? How did he react to it?
You know, when I interviewed him in his beautiful office in Phoenix, where he has like the collected works of Emily Dickinson on the bookshelves, you know, things like that. He's a real intellectual, and he was a socialist, as I mentioned before. But he has come to embrace the free market for sure. And when you ask him about the low completion rates, he flipped it around and said, "Well, a third of them are, and that's a third of people who wouldn't have otherwise had that opportunity." Now, that's the way he saw it, partly colored by the fact that he came from an era when that was probably more true, and he just turned it around and said, you know, it's about those success stories.
Emily Hanford is the education correspondent for American Radio Works. You can find a link to her documentary, The Rise of Phoenix, on our website. That's at marketplace.org. Thanks, Emily.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.